This week in Retronauts, come on down to the boardwalk and enjoy the kinetoscope. Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 13-pocket of volume 3 of Retronauts. That's a lot of qualifiers on that thing. Hi everyone, welcome to Retronauts.
Super Advanced Championship Edition.
Yes, that. I'm this week's host, Jeremy Parrish, and in the studio with me here, we have once again in reverse order...
Samuel fucking Claiborne.
Whoa.
Explicit tag.
I don't believe we have fornication on this podcast.
Oh, really? Okay.
I'm Bob gosh darn it Mackey. Now you have to say something.
Simplify it.
I'm Ray Consarn at Barnhold.
That's period appropriate. Thank you.
Yes.
And this week we're following up on the previous episode of Retronauts, the Golden Age of the Arcade, by going one tick backward in time, or several ticks, to the pre-video arcade. Talking about the roots and origins of arcades.
Now, none of us can relate to this.
Yeah, the kind of terrifying, creepy roots of arcades.
Yeah, this predates all of us. So what we have we've based on is, you know, through speculation and research, and it's actually really hard to find a lot of concrete information.
Yeah, there's two museums in the Bay Area. There's Playland down at the beach.
Thank you for saying that.
And
Musée Mécanique.
Musée Mécanique. And they both have old-timey exhibits of arcade boardwalk games.
Super
from San Francisco.
Yeah. Is Playland free admission? Can you just walk in there?
No, Playland Not at the Beach has an admission, but you can watch a guy perform a flea circus there.
I think Musée Mécanique is the only place on the wharf worth going to.
Yes. Yeah.
So you can drop your parents off the Applebee's across the way and then go have fun.
Yes.
And as for myself, my experience with pre-video arcades comes entirely from the boardwalk sequence of Bioshock Infinite. So everything I know is totally fictional.
What about Santa Cruz? Have you been to the Santa Cruz boardwalk? There's some old-timey stuff there.
Yeah, I have actually.
Laughing Sal.
Yeah. Is that what Hal Blevins bases his existence on?
Yes, maybe. Mm.
Yes. Anyway.
Sal's a lady, though.
Oh, well. Hey, yeah. Whatever.
Okay. Whatever floats your boat.
I feel like to provide a little more context for last week's episode, we should talk about kind of where the video arcade evolved from, which is basically non-video arcades. The American arcade, as we know it today, kind of got its start, I guess, in the early 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
Looking through penny arcades and things like that. Looking through sort of the games that that existed in arcades before video games, it seems the oldest one that I can find is Skee-Ball, which debuted in 1909.
Oh, yes.
That thing is more than 100 years old, and no one celebrated the centennial anniversary of Skee-Ball. There wasn't a single retrospective.
We'll wait till the bicentennial. Right, we're going to blow it out of the water.
200 years.
It'll be the Summer Olympics one day.
We could even do the sesquicentennial if you want.
Yeah.
Are we counting weird, like, Edison-related trickery? Like, were the kinetoscopes or something?
Yeah, kinetoscopes. I mean,
they're
that
before
sort of thing.
That.
Like, those weren't games per se.
I guess
but
not,
they,
no.
They were kind of where the whole arcade
I'm thinking of, like, World's Fair culture, where all these weird creations would be brought out and people would mess with them.
I mean, there is kind of like no starting point for the arcade. It is a continuity. It's sort of
started with the invention of the coin.
Right. Yes, back in the Roman era.
Ancient Rome.
It became so much easier to place a coin into a slot than a box of salt. Because, of course, salt was money back then.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. Whatever.
Your salt.
If you're listening at home.
Salary.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That wasn't just a random... Anyway.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Okay, this
coins.
Episode's done.
I was wondering why you want to pay me in salt for so long.
Yeah, yeah.
Retro nuts. I'm going to use that joke again.
There you go.
God, we should have got Conan O'Brien for this episode. He loves making those kinds of references.
So most of those, in my mind, like, there's very few games on a old-timey boardwalk. A lot of them are just put in a quarter and experience something
right,
ridiculous.
They're amusements as opposed to games per se.
But there were games, projection
definitely.
Ones mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
Right, but I mean...
And there's pinball.
The idea of the arcade actually goes back to toward the end of the 19th century. And, you know, the boardwalk does figure in pretty heavily because it's basically a place where people would go as sort of an amusement, a tourist destination. Someplace like Coney Island, where you maybe take off for the weekend, spend an afternoon there.
With your girl.
With a girl. Exactly. And when you didn't...
Everyone was a gangster.
When you weren't taking your life into your own hands by riding a rickety wooden roller coaster, you were perhaps strolling along the promenade.
Still risky. And,
yes, also risky, because there were lots of ties to organized crime and all of this. Much of this happened, you know, in like New Jersey.
Mm.
So that's kind of where it seems to have sprouted from, Atlantic City, places like that.
Yeah,
The most dangerous city.
Yes, of all. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as you were kind of killing time, chilling out, you would, you know, perhaps be attracted by these strange machines showing you strange, amusing, interesting things, and you'd put in a nickel.
I really like that the Musée Mécanique, and I wish they dated all their machines, because they don't. There's no placards or anything telling you where they came from or who made them or whatever. But a lot of them are these weird morality plays, like Opium Den and like the drunk. Like you put you put in a coin, and a drunk like wakes up in a graveyard and sees ghosts popping out of the ground because he's, you know, hallucinating.
And you can see that before you put in the coin. It's just after that everything shakes a little bit.
Right, right. And I mean there are morality plays, and there's like you can watch a Frenchman get his head cut off, or an Englishman be hung, or something like that. Yeah,
there's a guillotine scene that you just the lights go on, and then the guillotine comes down, the head falls off, and then your dime is done.
Is this like a film? Is it like an actual film? It's
a little model, a miniature.
Yeah, yeah. I think like the threshold for entertainment was if you were a child and not dying of either polio, tuberculosis, measles, mumps, rubella, yellow fever, that was entertaining. You're like, I'm alive. I'm watching an opium den.
Someone else died.
Yeah, exactly. So just keep in mind.
Those evolved from things like Punch and Judy shows, which go back centuries.
There's a lot of machismo based ones too. There's like Hold the Electric Shock, or and I know shooting galleries don't really count, but the miniaturized shooting gallery is a thing too, in which you put in a quarter and you aim a rifle at little targets in a game like the size of a pinball machine, and that's the thing you kind of show. You know, you did the ring toss with your best girl, and now you're going to show her that you can also hold these two little knobs while they shock you for a long time.
That's so strange. Like, arcade games were the John Henry scenario for carnies. Just like these machines were replacing them, you know?
Yep.
Who's going to yell about
ducks?
And
for those of you who were at the promenade without a girl, there were lots of little peep shows. You could put a nickel in and watch probably some sort of G-rated...
The creamiest ankle you've seen in your life.
Whoa, I see her petty skirts. My goodness, I need to go fan myself.
This is like the Mr. Burns
They're
episode.
False color, too.
It really is. But, I don't know. Like, the whole sort of weird early days, it's kind of hard to relate to because it all seems so simple. And we have, you know, supercomputers in our pockets that let us, you know.
Yeah, there's no standouts for me online. After playing a bunch of these things. Like, there's some novel ones, and you're like, oh, that's amusing. But I never think, like, man, I got to go back and play that again.
Right.
Check out my Skee Ball app.
It has Game Center integration.
One game like one that I think you guys might have played at the Pinball Museum is a tank of beans, and you just put in a scoop. Yes. And move the beans from one pile to another.
Yeah, thrilling.
Like dried beans.
Thrilling.
One day, kids, you'll be operating from the 16th century?
It was sort of like you're paying to rent expensive toys that you can never have in your house. Like, I'm going to play with the steam shovel for a minute. You know?
Yeah, that is true. It is kind of a cool steam shovel. Huh?
I'm sure there was an element of it. Like, you mentioned the kids. It's like, here's something that's like a toy. Looks more like an advanced toy. It's like sort of like a home games compared to video arcade games. Mm-hmm. You know, how much more advanced they were.
One time, guys, I played tic-tac-toe with a chicken after putting a quarter into a box at a place called Rawhide in Phoenix, Arizona.
Wow.
It was an ancient...
Wait, you were playing against the chicken?
Yeah, the chicken would peck and always win. It always won. And, it was getting fed some kind of thing, you know, and it would get to go first. And it knew how to win every time because the computer would just feed it stuff.
Wow.
It's an old-timey boardwalk game for you right there.
Yeah.
Involves a chicken.
So even back then, they were cheating.
Yeah, you could also put in a quarter, and a chicken would peck a ping pong ball through a basketball hoop.
Yeah.
And if it didn't, I didn't know what happened. Like, what if it just refused? New chicken? Weird. I don't know.
I think you can count on the fact that chickens always want food.
Yeah.
And once you train them to know how to get food, they would always get it.
But anyway, point is, thank God for video games.
Sam, the big money is in cow chip bingo. Oh, I hate the Midwest.
So where were we?
A lot of these things kind of coalesced and came into being in the wake of people sort of mastering electricity and the realization that if you put a lot of rapidly taken photographs together, you could get the impression of a video of a moving object.
Yeah.
So this became sort of entertainment. And if you didn't want to go and see a full movie, which I'm sure were very expensive back then, you could go and see a 5-second movie for a penny, and hence the penny arcade.
Did the Winsor McCay Gertie the Dinosaur thing start as a sideshow act? Like something that would be performed?
I don't know okay. what that is.
It was one of the first pieces of Finnish professional animation. Winsor McCay, the Little Nemo creator, yeah. he had an animation of a dinosaur that he would interact with. Like all the movements were planned out. I'm not sure if he performed that or if that was filmed or what, but I was just thinking of that as sort of like a magic trick that someone would go to see, you know, just the idea of entertainment.
Hmm. Yeah. I'm not familiar with that, but
it's really interesting.
That is interesting.
I think the thing that approached video games most back then was those strange reels of projected light images, and then you'd kind of move something in front of them.
Right, or there would be like
a race car, for instance.
Yeah, or like a strip of like printed canvas.
Is that how it worked, and then it rolls on a roller?
There were both. There were projections, okay. and there were also just rolling loops of canvas or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, basically,
so with you the rolling loops of canvas, it has like a roller on the top and bottom, and it just cycles a big banner, essentially.
I guess so. I've never actually
I'd
like
one of those up.
Yeah, I've never taken one
if,
apart.
If it is, that's reminiscent of a player piano, which is kind of the same technological.
And, you know, they made toys like that in our generation. You know, little car racing game.
I had like the little consoles.
Yeah, little fake cars or car racing consoles.
Yeah.
It was kind of like having a video game, but so much more primitive.
And really, the only feedback you get is kind of a series of dings, I think. It doesn't have like a score counter or
probably,
anything
like
that.
Those you mean cool. like an actual bell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's like ding, ding. Right. And you're just like, oh, I got three dings.
Yeah.
One.
Those did kind of evolve to become more complex, and in like the 60s and 70s there were things like a game called Missile, which, you know, you were kind of like shooting missiles at targets.
Sure, there's a version of Seawolf from that area. It's just an EM machine, electromechanical machine, that just has these lit torpedo silhouettes that, you know, you aim a periscope at something and the LEDs kind of show where it's hitting,
right?
And it's all lit and just kind of self-contained cool little, you know, thing you look into.
Right. I love that. And a lot of times, kind of with early video games, similar to that, a big part of the experience was the shape of the cabinet. So you'd have things like Periscope where, you know, it wasn't really much of a game, but you had an actual periscope that you looked through and, you know, pretended you were a submarine captain.
Yeah.
And, you know, that kind of thing maybe made it worth, you know, dropping in a nickel or however much, a quarter at the time. The sort of like quick little diversion, but, you know, it was the experience. It was more immersion. But, you know, that was later in the evolution. That was actually, I think Periscope was the mid 70s. So it was actually competing with video games.
That
so
showed you had a these, like a cool scene. You just looked around. I believe
it was like a kind of like a fake submarine battle, basically.
Okay.
So it was kind of one of those electromechanical amusements, but
by Allied Amusement, my favorite game company of all time.
Possibly.
Did we just ignore pinball, or are we getting to that?
We'll talk
okay,
because
that was like around since the 30s, I think.
Yeah. You know? No, this is a nice freeform
okay, cool.
kind of
got
experience.
It. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure.
But, you know, like I said, the things like Periscope and Missile, or even Nintendo's Duck Hunt, which evolved from the Laser Clay shooting system. These were all mechanical games that
Can you describe
were starting...
what Duck Hunt is? That sounds awesome.
I mean, it's kind of like a, you know, like a little fake shooting gallery sort of thing, except the objects are moving.
It's not like a big, it's not like one of their bowling alleys they rented out and did the light guns in. It's actually, it's a contained.
No, I believe it was a cabinet.
Okay.
But, you know, like those things were competing with video games.
Mm-hmm.
So they started to become more elaborate, more interesting sort of upfront because, you know, when you're dealing with the difference between moving objects on a screen that you control versus, you know, like primitive electrical mechanical objects, you know, obviously the video games were cooler and more interesting and more unique and more futuristic at the time. So you know, so they would build up, you know, the old experiences to be more interestingly presented. And
yeah,
exciting.
With like lots of art and flashing lights and moving parts, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That would distract or make a CRT game not work so well. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Pinball did the same stuff.
Yep. Yeah, and pinball obviously is sort of the big granddaddy of the pre-video arcade. I mean, that, yeah, Bob, you mentioned that pinball started in 1932, and that was actually created by Gottlieb, the company
Qbert.
Made Qbert. They were around from way back when, and they created a game called Ballyhoo. And I know nothing about Ballyhoo. I couldn't really find information on it. What made it unique?
I think I might have seen either a replica or original of that. But those old pin games are, you kind of just place the ball in it. You know, they don't even have glass. They're just kind of like roll these things down. And then the evolution is so fast, but then they do the plunger and then they get bigger. And
pre-flippers, I think pinball, the point of the game was to gamble on it. And that's why, mm-hmm. if you go to the pinball museum in Alameda, a lot of the pinball machines, as part of their marquee art, says this machine is not to be used for gambling purposes.
Yep.
So I think that lack of control was just, it was all chance, you know, without flippers.
Would you like to play a game of Lucky Hit?
Those games are really boring too, I might.
They are. I mean,
especially the ones where you just send the pinball into like, the play field is just like 9 holes.
Right, and you just have to wait for something to happen.
Jeez.
Yeah, pre-flipper is pretty bad. But they did exist.
It was weird though, because whenever I saw a pinball like reference on a Warner Brothers cartoon, it'd always be that old style. I'm like, what are they referencing? And it wasn't until much later I learned the history of pinball. I'm like, oh, that was a pinball machine, you know, in the 40s.
You mean when like a character is bouncing around like pins?
Well, like they would like show their eyes and you'd see the ball go up and like roll down in their teeth or something. I don't know. Like they'd always use pinball as a visual metaphor for things, but it was the old style pinball, you know?
Yeah.
Along with that and like war bonds and crap. I'm like, what are they talking about?
I guess I've never really seen those Bugs Bunny cartoons you're talking about.
Well, it's not like it's a notable thing, but it's just like one, you know, like a character would turn into something. Their heads would always turn into pinball tables. Yeah. And
you know, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, it's happened a few times. Anyway, digression.
I know, I get it.
Bugs Bunny survived.
That's good. I'm glad to hear it. I don't know. Can you really consider what he is now to be surviving? What kind of life is that?
He got to hang out with Michael Jordan.
I know, but then
that was his
like,
lowest moment.
No, they did that like extreme Looney
right.
Tunes.
Now he's on a fake Family Guy.
There was a lower moment than Space Jam.
Yeah, what was it? That thing.
Lunatics
did, like,
Unleashed.
Oh, yes,
Lunatics Unleashed.
It. Yeah.
And for some reason, Pepe Le Pew was a human. He was the only character that was turned into
a
human.
Was he like a really smelly human?
I don't know.
Was it Steve Martin doing his Pink Panther?
I think they're trying to Pepe Le Pew's a problematic character in his own way.
We'll save that for the podcast about Looney Tunes.
Yeah. All the Looney Tunes games. That'd be
Tiny Toons.
Yeah.
Tiny Toons Studio.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so pinball. I don't know. Like, I've never really been big into pinball, but I know that for a lot of people it's, you know,
I just got into pinball. It's like my favorite thing right now.
Why is it your favorite
thing? I play in a league.
Wow.
So what I've discovered about pinball is that you can develop a series of skills that applies to every pinball machine.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's interesting about it. It's like tennis, you know? You learn how to play pinball, and then you learn the really intricate rules for a certain machine. You know, and like what I've been learning about pinball is things like catching the ball, passing, and just generally like getting a feel for pinball, and I love it now, and I think it's really interesting. But once you learn a machine like, you know, Adam's Family or Doctor Who or something, the rule sets are so specific that you can just spend a long time with one. It's cool.
Caffeine.
Bob shaking.
My phone was shaking. I apologize for that. I don't know. I feel like I'm kind of spoiled because I'm more used to the story based pinball games, if you can call them that, of the 90s, where there's like a main mission and side quests. I just like to see how they abstract that into pinball terms. You know,
yeah, especially
like,
when it's based on a movie like Lethal Weapon or Baywatch or something. You know, they do abstract things like that.
Yeah, like the Addams Family. That was the first game I remember paying 50¢ for in my life, and
man,
I was like,
I
things have changed.
For Dragon's Lair too.
Oh wow, that was never in my area, so.
But yeah, that's what I enjoy about pinball right now. And I do like the later stuff. I don't like old-timey games too much. They're just really difficult. Like, the flippers are really far apart, and the ball just plummets, you know? There's a class of nostalgia for that, and those people are really interesting. The people that preserve old-timey games and amusements are really
crazy?
Into... Yeah, well, I think arcade collectors are probably pretty crazy, too, but...
That's literally where the term...
These guys are older.
Bells and whistles comes from, right? Pinball machines?
Yeah, as is all the bells and whistles.
Yeah, I suppose so.
You know, they don't actually have bells in them. I just opened up a pinball machine and saw for the first time the thing, the ding, 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 ding. That's a little Glockenspiel.
Oh, my God.
No kidding. Yeah, it's a little EM Glockenspiel. It goes ding, 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 ding. It just says three, and it doesn't...
There's like
colors.
A little cricket in there playing.
It's so cute.
I love that noise.
Yeah. Have you guys ever opened a pinball machine?
Never.
Have had the chance.
It is a beautiful experience. You, especially the old ones, you open it up and it's like, it is like a spaghetti dinner.
Yeah.
It's just, it's all hardwired.
Actually, at the Musée Mécanique, I was playing something and someone was repairing a pinball machine next to me and it looked like some sort of weird Geiger-esque alien technology with like hoses and ropes. And
then behind the back glass is the same thing.
Yeah.
So you open up the back glass on pinball machines from early eras. And one thing that's really funny is that they have a score. And back in the day, it would be go to 999 flip over. They're like, let's put a zero on it. People love that. And then they're like, let's put three zeros on it. And they just painted them there. And so three of them work. And then three of them are painted. Check that out next time you see an old-timey pinball
machine.
It is
weird. In old-timey pinball, you can get a score of like 13. You know? Yeah. It's like, what do I do with
but
this?
But it's so much more exciting when it's 13 million. And then pinball just went off with that. Even arcade games can do it as much as pinball. Like, you win tens of millions in low-scoring pinball games.
No, I don't know. There are a few games. Games like Mars Matrix, where the smallest action you take is like a billion points.
I think that's really funny.
It's hilarious. It's just like there's these superfluous digits. Mm-hmm. Never change. They're pointless.
That was kind of like the old timey like runaway competition design. It's like we figured out a way to get people to do this, and then it just everybody just does it to the extreme. It's really funny, like adding flippers and stuff like that. Scores.
Yeah. Jeez.
I don't think you can score in many of the other EM machines, but there's games like Horseshoes, which just has the lit up LED in the background. Not LED, but little light bulbs. Have you guys ever played one of those?
I don't think so.
Two people spin. You put in a quarter.
That's actually at the Pinball Museum, yeah.
Yeah, and two people spin a disc on either side, and you throw horseshoes back and forth. But the actual game is a big lit up plastic panel, and then it just lights up lights behind it to show the path of the horseshoe. It's really cool. If I could fly like birds on high, then straight to her arms I'd go sailing. It's far beyond the star, it's near beyond the moon. I know beyond a doubt. They did do a lot of.
Keep talking about the horseshoe thing, if you guys.
That's Price is Right wheel technology.
It is.
I always find it interesting how they always use light bulbs and like LEDs to represent objects and make them move around and stuff. And that's really working within limits. And it's really fascinating.
It's a visual way to represent something pre-video.
Yeah.
And it lasted for a long time. Like there's games from the 70s that do that.
Mm-hmm.
And take your feedback, which is even more interesting.
Can we talk about full motion video games prior to Laserdisc video?
Yes, actually, I'd be interested to hear about those.
There are some.
There are quite a few, but the one I like the most, or I haven't actually played it, but I've watched videos of it, is Wild Gunman by Nintendo from the mid 70s. I think maybe 74, and it was basically a video. I'm not sure how it was projected. I'm probably not even videotapes were used, but you had a window of time in which to fire. You weren't actually aiming at anything in particular, as far as I know. And if you got it in that window, the guy would fall over. You see the video of him falling over. But if not, something else would happen to you. You'd like the camera perspective would change in some way. But it's all online. I didn't actually know about it until about a year ago. But it's one of those weird predecessors to what would eventually become a later Nintendo game.
Right. Was that called Wild Gunman or was that called Sheriff?
Sheriff is something different. Yeah. Wild Gunman is actually what it was called in the... Wild Gunman was eventually a digital arcade game in the 80s. But in the 70s, it was a full motion video game, whatever you want to call that.
Okay, yeah, I've never been clear on that, but
it was really just a quick draw game.
Well, the whole Nintendo history, like the pre-video history, is really interesting because they're really the only game developer around that had that sort of pre-video history. I mean, I guess Namco and Sega did to a degree, but they don't really celebrate it.
Taito, I believe, made some of those really old mechanical arcade game stand-ups.
Sega was a pinball repair company.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So they were involved.
But I mean, those companies never really celebrate that aspect of their history.
Yeah,
Nintendo is always happy to be like, hey, remember this thing that happened before you were born? Oh, you don't? Well, we remember.
Yeah.
And Bally and Williams, have been around for decades and decades and decades.
Right.
Before.
Are they still making video games?
Oh, they're not making video games.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I want to make a quick side note, Bob, about Wild Gunman. I wonder if there were like... gamers back then who were like, oh man, this electronic reboot of Wild Gunman really sucked.
I like the original.
Yeah.
They're really selling out, catering to the masses.
But I mean, I saw games at the fair that were those quick draw games. They didn't involve video. You were like shooting a dummy, but you had a certain amount of seconds to do it. So I assume that was the same technology. It just knew when you were pushing the button on the gun or whatever.
Yeah.
There's always the love tester. My favorite.
Yeah, we mentioned that before. Right.
Those, I have no idea how those work. Like, where you actually hold the knob and then...
I feel like it's just a really gussied up random number generator, you know?
That's all you do is hold it, right? Two people hold it, maybe?
You could do two. I mean, there's many different kinds. One is just you put your hand on the thing. Another one is, like, two people grab onto it. Mm-hmm. I mean, talk about the arcade versions.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, the really interesting thing about Nintendo's pre-video arcade history is that it just seems like the company was always in dire straits from one minute to the next. But I was reading yesterday...
Well, the Love Hotel market can't hold for that long.
I was reading yesterday as I was doing research for this episode that, you know, Nintendo's arcade machines were mostly made of plastic, which makes sense, right? And in the 1970s, there was an oil crisis where the cost of oil spiked incredibly high. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the cost of making plastics, which are made from petroleum, became incredibly expensive, which is why G.I. Joe went from a 12-inch figure to a 3-inch figure, because 3 inches of plastic is a lot cheaper to make than 12 inches. yeah. But, you know, for Nintendo, the oil crisis nearly bankrupted the company. And they were making things like, you know, the laser clay shooting attraction, Duck Hunt and Sheriff and that sort of thing. And it forced them to, you know, start making more like toys and things for the handheld market and the home market. And kind of changed the direction of the company. That may be, I don't know, another reason that the company was eager to get out of the arcade business in the 80s, because between that and the radar scope problem that they faced, it just seemed like arcades didn't really do them a lot of favors.
Indeed. There's another class of funny EM games, the electromechanical games, that you hang a wall panel on the wall, and it's just like a big image of a guy with a gun. And it's a predecessor to the shooter. And what it is like the guy with the gun is in the corner, and then little lights light up around this really cool, like, you know, painted piece of plastic back glass or something, you know, and then there'll be ducks on it. And then you can aim his gun in certain positions and then he shoots at the ducks and they go out.
I've seen that.
Yeah. They're really pretty. And like, you know, you hang it on your wall in your house and it looks like a really cool, like, you know, old timey piece of artwork. True. But then it lights up and you can play it.
Yeah.
Love that. That's pretty
video gaming. So all these devices were kind of in the same system as pinball machines, or not pinball machines, but jukeboxes. And, you know, we talked about that last episode. But, you know, over time...
Photo booths.
Yeah, exactly. Over time, you know, more and more video games started to sort of filter into the system. And what you ended up with was what we kind of recognize as the arcade industry that exists today, and especially in the 80s. So that's important. But again, there's actually, I don't know, there's not really that much to say about these things. Like, they were pretty primitive, pretty limited.
There was a lot of imagination inside them.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of imagination, like you guys were saying, in how you could, you know, take these just limited sets of mechanisms and express ideas with them and create entertainment through them.
And take people's money.
Yes, exactly. That was really what it was all about.
Yeah, especially if you're a member of the mob.
Yeah, sometimes you didn't even have to wait for them to put quarters in. You would just go and take the money directly.
We'll take these quarters.
Thanks, buddy.
Sometimes they'd come to your house.
Quarters and thumbs.
So, I don't really personally have anything more to say about this. It's just kind of an interesting footnote, one of those video game origin stories.
Right. If you want to learn more about it, check out the museums in San Francisco. There's the ones I mentioned, and the Pacific Pinball Museum. All great museums.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, again, like I joked at the top of the show, we can't really relate to them as much.
Yeah.
So,
well, I remember Opium Den.
Hey, unless we wanted to invite one of our grandparents on, but otherwise.
I'm all out.
It is still fascinating, though, and I like, you know, I like hearing about the oil crisis stuff, and Nintendo worked in that era. Yeah.
I always like when they leave you with something. When you put in your quarter, you get some kind of fortune-telling thing that happens, and then they shoot out a little card.
Oh, yeah.
That's the coolest.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they did it with your weight too. You could do like a weighing machine. They like kick out a little card with your weight on it.
Well, that's just practical.
It's thrilling.
Who needs a doctor?
Back when you had to, you know, take your wagon to the doctor every 3 years to get weighed.
Exactly. It's like the blood pressure machines at Walgreens.
Those are fun. Yeah. They're free.
Yeah, exactly.
So that wraps it up for Retronauts Volume 3. Episode 13, Pocket.
Wow.
Yes.
We need some like acronyms or something to work in there.
Yeah. So anyway, you can find us at retronauts.com where we'll have show notes. Please join in the conversation about this episode. Fill us in on interesting things that we overlooked in our research, or just, you know, if you're really old, share your memories of what it was like to, you know, be a kid in the 1950s playing these electromechanical amusements. We'd love to hear about it. You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Twitch, on Tumblr. I think that's about it.
The internet is our oyster.
We're Retronauts everywhere. And that's N-A-U-T. Thank you. Retronauts, not Retronauts with a G-H. Anyway, I'm Jeremy Parrish here with Ray, Bob, and Sam. And we'll be back next week.
I just blowed in and I got them Dust Bowl blues. I just blowed in and I got them Dust Bowl blues. I just blowed in and I'll blow back out again. I guess you've heard about every kind of blues. I guess you've heard about every kind of blues. But when the dust gets high, you can't even see the sky. I've seen the dust so black that I couldn't see a thing. I've seen the dust so black that I...